At our congregational auction each year, I put up for bid the opportunity to hear me preach on whatever topic the highest bidder is most passionate about or thinks would be particularly important and meaningful to this congregation, or just perversely thinks would be challenging or bizarre to make me preach about. Depends on the year. As you heard during the spoken meditation, Leslie and Jim have challenged me to speak about a very human and a very common condition, and that is the gap between our beliefs and our behaviors. In particular, they invited me to speak about those beliefs that best define the Unitarian Universalist movement now and in the future, and the beliefs that all of us should attempt to manifest and live them out. And that I specifically speak to certain and ongoing behaviors that might help make Unitarian Universalism a more integral part of our daily lives. One uncharitable word for this gap between beliefs and embodied behaviors is, of course, hypocrisy, right? But of course, there's an easy way to avoid being a hypocrite. Just have really low standards. And then you'll always succeed in surpassing that very low bar that you've set for yourself, right? All right, done. But even in a cursory glance at our UU7 principles that are printed on the back of each of our orders of service each week show that we as a movement have set very high goals for ourselves. Things like the inherent worth and dignity of just those people we like. No, of every person. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice, not just for some, but for all. And instead of an easily reached low bar of expectations, we are more likely as a result to find ourselves exhausted or guilty of self-flagellation for our inability to live up to all that we hope to achieve. So what do we do in light of our high goals if we find ourselves, instead of saving the world, once again falling asleep on our sofa in front of the TV? Or from a related perspective, a few weeks ago I told you the story of when I was a teenager and I was talking with my youth minister and a man came up and was homeless and asked us for some money. And he said no, and I later asked him why, and he said, well, if we started giving money to everyone who asked, then the church budget would be gone in a day. But even as a young teenager, I sensed that he was somehow being duplicitous, though it took me time to be able to articulate why. Because I was increasingly unable to reconcile the positions of Jesus's much more radical teachings in the Sermon on the Mount with what he was showing me with his behavior. Things like, if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. Not countersue them, right? Give your cloak as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, not, you know, because you want to, but forces you to go 1 mile, go a second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you. That one was particularly unambiguous and was part of the problem. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. These are hard teachings, they're radical teachings, but they're not ambiguous teachings. And I was taught to study the Bible daily and to do what Jesus did, but I became disillusioned with the gap between alleged beliefs and actual behavior. As a recent article on Slate said about surveys that are increasingly exposing the discrepancy with what Americans say on surveys, how they self-report about their religiosity and how often they attend religious communities. Basically, if everyone who said they attended religious communities weekly did, then all of the religious communities would be filled up like 4 times over, all our buildings. So in the words of this Slate article, our society tends to talk Jesus and walk Santa. And historically, a major part of that shift from Orthodox Christianity to liberal Christianity, which is what our increasingly robust UU pluralism was born out of liberal Christianity, it was about that move from Orthodox Christianity's emphasis on right belief. So if you think Orthodox, like orthodontist, right? Orthodonte means straighten teeth. Orthodox means straighten your doctrine. If you know the word doxology, right? It's the same word. Right praise, right beliefs. So that was orthodoxy said you have to believe the right things. Liberal Christianity says, no, you have to do the right things. Right belief to right action, or what is sometimes called ethics. So it's not about worshiping Jesus. It was about doing what Jesus did in your time and place. And our Unitarian Universalist tradition teaches that it's much more important what you do, whether you live a life of kindness and compassion, that you contribute to more peace and justice in the world, that that's much more important than what you say that you believe. As the motto goes, we believe in deeds, not creeds. Or as John Adams, the second president of the United States and an active Unitarian, said, I do not attach much importance to creeds because I believe one cannot be wrong whose life is right. One cannot be wrong whose life is right. Along these lines, one of my favorite stories that Rabbi Jesus told is the lesser-known parable of the two sons. A man had two sons. He went to the first and said, Son, would you go and work in the vineyard for me today? And his son answered, No, Dad, I will not. But later, that son changed his mind, and he went, and he did that work in the vineyard that his father had asked him to do. The father went to the second son and said the same, and that son answered, Sure, Dad, I'll go, or what the Bible actually says is, I go, sir. But that son didn't go, even though he said that he would. And Jesus said to those religious leaders that had gathered before him because they were disturbed that they thought Jesus believed the wrong things, he said to them, Truly I tell you, the tax collectors and the prostitutes are going to the kingdom of God ahead of you religious leaders who think you have the right beliefs, but your behavior is not in line. And as I began to question traditional Christian creeds, I found much comfort in this parable and other places where it was clear that it's less important whether you can say the Nicene Creed without your fingers crossed than, and more important, if you're seeking to live in a generous, open-hearted way, as Jesus and other wisdom teachers have demonstrated and taught throughout the ages. And Jesus told that parable intentionally to scandalize the religious leaders of his day, who thought that they had the right beliefs and they could stop there. When Jesus ends that parable with the jab, truly I tell you that those hated tax collectors and those shamed prostitutes are going to the kingdom of God ahead of you, he means that those who are on the margins of society are often kinder, more compassionate, more intended on building a just world than society's leaders. And that's one reason there's been so much excitement about Pope Francis. People are seeing an all too rare alignment between beliefs and behaviors in a world religious leader, someone who cares less about fame, pomp, and circumstance than about caring for the least of these, the poor. Accordingly, Unitarian Universalism has evolved into what we call a non-creedal tradition. We're not a creedal tradition, we're a covenantal tradition. What's important is the covenant that we make together of how to live and build a beloved community amidst all our diversity. In the words of a former UUA president, the memory we seek to embody is of forebears wise enough to put aside the creedal question of what do we believe in common, to put that aside and instead substitute the far more profound covenantal questions. How shall we treat one another? How shall we help one another here? What hopes do we share? And what promises shall we make to deepen one another's lives in the precious time we have together in this life and on this earth? Another way of expressing this difference is that some sociologists of religion have noted an important shift happening in our world from the paradigm of believe, behave, belong, in which newcomers to a religious community first have to believe the right doctrines. When you come through the door, do you believe the right things? And then maybe we'll say, now, do you behave correctly? And finally, maybe then we might let you belong. The postmodern paradigm that Unitarian Universalism and other progressive religions represent reverses that order to belong, behave, believe. Today, most newcomers want to feel first like they belong, that this is a safe place that's open and accepting, and there's a place for me here. And then they might be open to reflecting on their ethics, how I might behave differently in light of this community. And over time, they might just find their core beliefs and values shifting as a result of being a part of this beloved community. As the saying goes, it's easier to act your way into a new way of thinking than to think your way into a new way of acting. That being said, allow me to turn now from this very human and common condition of finding a gap between our beliefs and our behaviors to ways we might better begin to align our Unitarian Universalist beliefs, these high principles and high bars we've set for ourselves, into a more integral part of our daily lives. First, if we're going to have any hope of advancing those lofty goals, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, then we must reorient ourselves from independence to interdependence. Our forebears were right to rebel against corrupt authorities, oppressive communities, and antiquated traditions, but that vital, hard-fought individualism can only carry us so far. And we find ourselves in a society today characterized by some extreme individualism that is eviscerating our common good. We need to seek not only what profits our individual selves, our individual bank accounts, our individual spiritualities. We need to ask, what's best for myself? That's an important question. But what's best not only for myself, but for myself and others? We need to expand the so-called exclusive bottom line of profit alone to include what is sometimes called the triple bottom line. Profit is still a part. Profit motive is real. We're human. But what about the triple bottom line of people, planet, and profit, that all three matter? Along these lines, perhaps the most well-known and revered Unitarian historically is Ralph Waldo Emerson. But we sometimes forget that Emerson walked away from his Unitarian pulpit. He did not commit over a lifetime to the hard but rewarding work of building a community, a beloved, diverse community in one place. In contrast, the late UU historian Conrad Wright reminds us that Emerson's 19th century contemporary, Henry Bellows, is much more the reason why we Unitarian Universalists are still around. Bellows was the prime mover of herding cats in the 19th century. He's the one that said we should take all these autonomous Unitarian congregations and we should network them in a larger association. Before Bellows, the American Unitarian Association, it was a collection of individuals, not of congregations. He's who changed that. And whereas Emerson lasted 3 years, 3 years as a minister, Bellows lasted 43 years as the minister in just one congregation, All Souls Unitarian in New York City. Bellows also reached out and had his congregation reach out to the larger community, as we're doing with this family emergency shelter and we'll do in other ways. In particular, during the Civil War, Bellows noticed that women in his congregation had found a really profound way of serving. They were going out into Civil War battlefields and they were helping the nurses, they were helping create much cleaner conditions. And Bellows said, we need to be doing this everywhere the Civil War is going on. He got in touch with President Lincoln. He didn't get any funding from President Lincoln, but he got permission from President Lincoln to form what we now know as the U.S. Sanitary Commission, of which Bellows became the first president. They cleaned up campsites, they provided food, clothing, and medical supplies, they improved hospital conditions, and as many people who died in the Civil War, far less died than would have otherwise because of these clean conditions. As well as later, they helped Civil War veterans with jobs, with pensions, and with health care. To make a similar impact here in the 21st century, we need to balance our natural inclination toward Emersonian individualism with a Bellowsian interdependence. You can take that one home, right? Bellowsian interdependence. All right. We need to turn toward one another for mutual trust and support. There's so much more we can do together than alone. In this spirit, I'm pleased to report that all the critical positions are filled far in advance of our first family emergency shelter, where we're partnering together with two other congregations to make sure that families in our community, families with children who have found themselves temporarily without a home, have a simple, decent place to live that's safe for the night. Now, I should say, that's interdependence in action, But as I'll say more about in a future sermon, the reason that's necessary is our failure at interdependence in our larger society to provide affordable housing and simple, decent places to live. And you can track the failure to provide affordable housing with the increase in homelessness. So I hope that one result that will come out of this family emergency shelter work is we can begin to understand things like the National Coalition for the Homelessness, that we can start to work on two levels, that we can work here locally to say, you know, it can be intimidating to say, we need to cure homelessness in this country, right? That's not where you start. You start by saying, what we can do immediately is provide shelter for families that need it for themselves and for their children. But then we also need to start working on the national level to change the system. Looking to the larger UU movement, my colleague, the Reverend Sarah Moldenhauer Salazar, points toward a fascinating recent survey of 700 self-identified Unitarian Universalists who were not affiliated with any local congregation. This is the group. There's a very large group of them. We lovingly call them free-range UUs. And these findings are significant from studying these 700 because the number of individuals who identify as Unitarian Universalists, so at the census and other surveys, they check the box, I'm a Unitarian Universalist, but aren't members of our local congregation, it's 4 times larger than the membership of our local congregation. 4 times larger. People really are out there that are waiting to be integrated in meaningful ways into our congregations. And in response to the question, when do you feel most Unitarian Universalists, these free-range UUs said, they feel most UU when they're with other Unitarian Universalists, when they're with people of different religious beliefs, right? They're like, wow, I really am a Unitarian Universalist when they're, and then 3, when they're living out their values. So when they're out in the world protesting and acting for social justice, or when they're engaged in spiritual practices. We need each other. We're stronger together, and we change ourselves and our world when we live out our values. And that's why I encourage you regularly, you may get tired of hearing me saying that, but I'm not going to stop saying it until the statistics change, that I encourage you to invite your friends, your family, and your colleagues. I know that what you know people, they are out there who would find this place to be good news. They need to be here, and we are stronger when they are here and we can work together. Sometimes, whether we show up on Sunday morning, whether we show up for all these events that I was listing during the week, that really matters because sometimes we show up for ourselves, but sometimes we're showing up for other people because something you say, something you do, just your presence, that might be the beloved community that someone else needs to get through one more week. And beyond Sunday morning, as we seek to integrate our Unitarian Universalist principles into our daily lives, I know of individuals and families who each evening, often at the dinner table, they have a chalice in the center of their table and they light it at the beginning of the meal. That is sort of their family spiritual practice. And then depending on the day of the week, they share about how they've succeeded or failed in living up to the corresponding UU principle. So say it's Monday, the first day of the week, they reflect using the first principle. How did each of us succeed or fail to recognize the inherent worth and dignity of every person that we encountered today? Or on Tuesday, the second day of the week, in what ways did I fail or succeed in living up to the second principle of justice, equity, and compassion in human relations? Or you can throw them a curveball, right? Do the seventh principle on Wednesday. You know, go crazy. Our goal over time, though, is to notice the ways when it's easiest for you to put your UU values into practice. Which principles are easiest for you? What people, places, and things are easiest for you to interact with and embody your UU values? And try to do more of that, because that's easy for you. But then also to begin to notice the ways when it's hardest for you, the people, the places, and the things, when it's most challenging for you to embody your UU values, and how might you begin to adjust there? To adapt an old evangelist line about behaviors and beliefs, if you were accused in court of being a Unitarian Universalist, could they convict you? Would there be enough evidence? Now, that line is potentially more guilt-inducing than is perhaps helpful. But the point is that our UU tradition challenges us. It's not what we say we believe that matters. It's not what we print on the back of our order of service. Deeds, not creeds. Behavior is believable.